Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Let's go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for a Wednesday here on American Airlines, Patriots.com radio. John Rook, Eric Scalabino from Football Weekly. How are we doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. You're missing out some pizza, though, today.
You know, it figures last week was the week that I was in studio on a Wednesday. This week I'm back, you know, in the home studio and I've missed out on the pizza. There was no pizza last week.
No.
Sucks to be you.
But you were here for the cookies yesterday.
I did have the cookies yesterday. That did help a little bit, but no pizza today. Oh, well, you know. Hey, you know, that's the price you got to pay, I guess, for the luxury of lounging in your, you know, in your PJs.
I don't want to know what you're wearing. Please. No. Keep that to yourself.
Oh, God. There's something just a little bit gross about that.
More than just a little.
No, it's totally and completely normal here today. My wife wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, man.
Totally normal. Got my khakis and my shirt and my jacket on. It's cold down here in the basement, dadgummit.
Put the heat on.
Yeah, I know. Well, I have...
It's November, you know. You can put
I know.
The heat on.
I have electric heat down here. It's not part of my zone heating in my home. It's completely separate, so it's basically electric heat in my basement, and I just haven't really kind of turned it on.
You have a space heater?
It's more like a wall heater. Yeah, similar.
All right.
Yeah, so anyway. Okay, now that we've totally and completely thrilled everybody. A couple of things that I was thinking about. Listening to some conversations, local radio yesterday, and then doing a little surfing last night. And one of the things I wanted to open up with today, and by the way, hour two of the program today, Don Banks from Sports Illustrated, SI.com, he's going to join us talking a little about the NFL. And,
good guy.
And as Fred mentioned, conference calls taking place with members of the Dolphins. Coach, players, such, and we'll want to listen into what Joey Porter might have to say a little bit later on in the program today.
I'm so sick of his act, John.
What's that?
I am so sick of his act.
Well, you know, it's all, to me, it's all very theater-ish. And, you know, I know he's just a BS artist. It doesn't surprise me at all. So, you know, hey, if that, you know, gets your blood going, then that's fine. That's exactly what he's doing. He's doing what he sets out to do, and that's to get you riled up and to get you thinking about things other than performing on the field. And if that's, you know, what the Patriots do, then he feels like he's won the battle. He's all about, you know, using a war of words. It's all a psychological ploy. I'm not so sure that Joey's smart enough to realize that's what he's doing. But, you know, frankly, that in effect is what he's doing. So, you know, we'll hear what he has to say, and then you can be the judge, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hey, John, real quick, I'm a tangent here. Tangent,
sure.
Tangent alert. I'm watching highlights of last night's Syracuse defeat to
Division
II Lemoyne.
I'm watching the same thing.
What in the heck happened there?
I know. How about that? Yeah,
we have two Syracuse grads in the booth, by the way, with Doctor and Toyota.
You're big yapper!
Division II, Lemoyne's Dolphins
beat
25th-ranked Syracuse.
Teaching moment.
Was that a... Was that an exhibition game or was that regular season?
No, it was exhibition.
Oh, okay.
Exhibition. It won't count.
All right. Good thing it won't count.
Yeah, entirely it will not count.
Giving the Big East a bad name over here.
Oh, you know, I think everybody understands the Big East won't be quite as good as it was last year, but, you know, still, losing to a Division II team is...
Yeah.
But it's not the first time it's happened. So,
No. Chaminade. Remember Chaminade? Who did they beat in that tournament?
Providence.
Yeah. That's right. I knew I remember that for some reason. Damn.
That was back in 1992 or 91.
Yeah.
But yes, they did. They were Division II at the time. Yes, that is correct.
Oh, they're up in the big time now?
I seem to think that they are, but maybe they're not. Maybe they're still Division II. I don't know. I don't really keep track of Chaminade. I, you know, kind of blocked that out of my memory. So, one of the things that I was kind of thinking about while, you know, doing some research last night was legacy. And I know that means a lot to a lot of fans. Heck, let's face it, it means a lot to a lot of people there, you know, at the stadium. Everybody wants to feel like, you know, they've had a little slice of, you know, immortality within the confines of the NFL. And so now that we're, you know, halfway through the final season of the aught decade, you know, the opening decade of the 21st century, I'm wondering, in your estimation, in the fans' estimation, those who listen to this program, do you definitively see the Patriots as the team of this decade? And, you know, and I say that because a lot of people love to, it's a great debate. It really is. I mean, I don't know that there's a perfect answer. There's probably several right answers here. But when you go back in the NFL, Eric, and you know this as well as anybody, having been a football fan and covering it for a while and having played the game and all that stuff, the 60s are given to the Packers, right?
Absolutely.
70s are given to the Steelers, pretty much, right?
Yep, absolutely.
80s, probably given to the Niners.
Correct.
Okay. 90s, I'm going to say Cowboys.
Yep.
Although if the Bills had won a couple of those Super Bowls, you could make a case for the Bills, I think. But I'm going to say 90s to the Cowboys.
Yep, definitely.
The 2000s, which we're working on here.
It's hands down, unquestionably, it's New England.
See, I don't think so. And that's where we're going to differ, and that's why I'm asking the question today. Because when you look at it, first of all, Pittsburgh has won two championships since the Patriots last won one.
Yes,
think about that for a second.
No, I realize that. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
You could even make a case if the Colts win this year, giving them a second title in this decade. You could even make a case at least for over the last half of this decade, the Colts being the dominant team in the NFL. You could make a case. I'm not saying that it would be accurate, but you could make a case. But what I'm thinking here is sort of a twofold question. Number one, do you still look at as the Patriots, as the team of the, you know, opening decade of the 2000s? And if not, who's their chief competition? And I happen to think it does come from those two teams that I just mentioned. It's either Pittsburgh or it's Indianapolis. Now, if Pittsburgh wins the Super Bowl again, which would make it back-to-back and would make it three of the last 4 years, I'm afraid, Patriots fans, you got to step aside and you have to hand it to Pittsburgh.
Why?
Now, if the Colts win and win a second title since the Patriots last won one, you could certainly make an argument for the Colts being at least an equal to the Patriots in this decade and it pretty much being a wash. I think for the Patriots to be considered unequivocally the team of the opening decade of 2000, the aught decade, whatever you want to call it, all right, it's kind of awkward, isn't it? You know, we don't really know what to call it.
Yeah.
It's not the tens, it's not the teens,
yeah, it's
the
aughts. The aughts, right.
Okay, so if we want to make the Patriots the team of the aught decade, I think the Patriots probably need to go as far as at least the AFC title game, if not back to the Super Bowl. Now, again, yes, the Patriots went to the Super Bowl year before last and lost it. I think we realize that. So that was at least another Super Bowl appearance.
If they, if Asante Samuel made that interception, would you even be asking this question right now?
No.
Okay,
no.
So that tells me that
if Rodney Harrison had somehow knocked the ball away from David Tyree, no, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Which tells me then that the Patriots are unequivocally the team of the decade.
But they're not, because the Patriots didn't do that.
No, but it tells me that because a team of the decade is defined by a couple of things, I think. Obviously, number of Super Bowl wins. Because if you go back in those decades, the team that had the most Super Bowl wins in that decade were the Cowboys, the Niners, Steelers, Packers.
But in this decade, okay, if the Steelers win, they're going to have three, just like the Patriots.
Right, but what they're not going to have is the same number of AFC championship appearances and a 16-0 regular season.
But they're also going to, we all know that memory has to do with what have you done for me lately. And lately, the Steelers would have dominated. Therefore, the Steelers, again, this is human nature I'm talking about here, Eric. Human nature is going to dictate that the Steelers are going to get the nod over the Patriots based on what they've done lately.
I'm also going to go with playoff appearances. New England has more playoff appearances.
Mm-hmm.
They have more AFC Championship game appearances. They have, even if they have the same number of Super Bowl wins this decade, what team has consistently performed, been in the hunt, and been talked about around the league than the Patriots this decade? There is no other team.
Again, you could also make the argument that the Patriots have been talked about negatively in that light because of the whole Spygate issue.
You could also say that the Cowboys were talked about negatively about the White House. You could also say that the Steelers, after the fact, were talked about negatively about their steroid use.
But that didn't wipe out what they accomplished in those decades. We're still in this decade. We're talking about, you know, the Cowboys and their controversies and the Steelers and whatever controversy they might have. We're talking about that, you know, a decade or two after it occurred.
The White House,
they had already
the
firmly established themselves, in my case, they had already firmly established themselves as the teams of those decades before any sort of, shall we say, monkey was thrown in. Wrench was thrown in, you know, that kind of thing.
And I would say the same thing about the Patriots. Until Spygate happened, the Patriots had firmly established themselves as the team of the decade.
But it still happened in this decade, though, Eric.
Right.
What I'm saying is that any sort of controversy for those other teams happened well after the decade had completed.
I don't think so with the Cowboys. I think in the 90s there was a lot of, you know, Michael Irvin's drug use and all the nonsense.
All right, I will allow for that. Yeah, late 90s.
That stuff was happening towards the middle and the end of that dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, books came out after the fact, but people knew about that while it was happening.
Okay.
You know, in that particular case, I think people, you know, there's really not much you can get on the 49ers for in the 80s, I don't think. As far as, you know, negative off the field
probably
stuff.
Not. I don't really remember. I just, you know, but, and again, the reason I'm saying, another reason I'm saying this is because looking at it, you know, this league in the salary cap era has been built on parity, and which is sort of a, it's sort of a weird thing to say this year because we really have a system of haves and have-nots. We have a caste system more than any other time in recent memory in the NFL this year. And I know, you know, there are a lot of people that would probably agree with that. We just seem to have more good teams and more bad teams and fewer middle road teams in the league this year than we have in recent years. So in that light, even though this league was built on parity, this is sort of a parity decade. And for the Patriots to stand out like this in the parity decade, I think certainly, yes, it does speak to their accomplishments as a franchise, as a football team, as an organization as a whole. That being said, that dominance, that advantage over they have, risks being tempered by quite a bit if you have, first of all, if you don't have the Patriots win, or if B, either the Steelers or the Colts win instead, because they would have finished this decade much more strongly.
Colts, if the Colts won this year, they'd only have two rings this decade, which doesn't beat three rings anytime.
No, but you could also certainly make the argument that they were much more successful in terms of division titles and playoffs and wins total.
I don't think you can, though.
We'll have to look that up, because I think the Colts are probably, if not better off, they're maybe even past the Patriots in a couple of respects.
I don't think they made as many AFC championship games. They may have had as many playoff appearances.
I'll tell you what got me thinking about all this. The fact is that this week, if the Colts win, it's 17 regular season games they would have won in a row if they win this week, which means that, of course, when they would play the Patriots week after next, they'd be going for their 18th regular season win.
Okay.
And, of course, as we all know, the Patriots were the last team to do 18 in a row, happening from 2003 to 2004,
mm-hmm.
which it would tie them for the second longest streak all time in NFL history.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if they beat the Patriots and go to 18 wins, that you'd have to say that the Patriots' record of 21 in a row, set from 06 to 08, would definitely be in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And that's what got me thinking about this whole decade dominance bit.
Yeah. No, it's a good topic. It's a good topic. I just think it's hands down, no matter what happens. When people look back at this decade, people who live through this decade look back at it 20 years from now, the only team that's really going to stand out is this one. Because this is the team that's had all the focus. All the focus has been on this team one way or the other throughout this decade, and that's what people are going to remember.
A Patriots perspective, you're absolutely
from
right.
From an NFL perspective, everyone every year says that in this decade, they're shooting for the Patriots. They're doing things to try to beat the Patriots.
But in the 90s, they were shooting for the Cowboys. And in the 80s, they were shooting for the Niners.
Right.
And in the 70s, they were shooting for the Steelers. In the 60s, they're shooting for the Packers.
That's my point. They're shooting for the Patriots this decade, meaning the Patriots are the team of this decade. They are the dominant, preeminent team of this decade. Everybody is looking up at them and trying to take them down.
Right. But none of those teams had, shall we say, a tailing off, with the exception really of the Cowboys, probably toward the end of the 90s, that the Patriots have had if the Patriots don't end up back in a championship scenario this year.
Well, that's all I'm saying here. But a lot
of that is because I think of the parity that has intrinsically been built inside of the National Football League as a whole.
But I think that the 2007 season solidified that. They had a couple of years off. They had the miracle run in 07.
Had they won in 07, I would not be having this argument with you. Again, we're going full circle here. You know, and perhaps we'll just have to agree to disagree. Had they won that, it's a slam dunk. They could have finished dead last in 08 and 09 and still been the team of the decade if they had been able to cap off 17-0. There's no doubt that would have happened. Or 19-0, excuse me.
Yeah, 19-0.
I mean, that's there's no doubt. But they didn't, okay? The sad fact remains is they didn't. As painful as it is, it's still to admit that. And I'm saying that I think that they left the door cracked open for a couple of other teams to leave a lasting impression on this decade, depending upon what happens this year. The Colts are approaching the Patriots' regular season dominance. Okay, they're getting very close.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers, in terms of titles, can tie the Patriots in this decade if they win this year. So you can make an argument, I think, for both of those franchises. Nobody else comes close, that I will admit. But if the Patriots end up, you know, at least on a par, let's say they meet the Steelers in the AFC title game, then it's still going to be the Patriots. If they meet the Colts in the AFC title game, it's still going to be the Patriots. The Patriots have to get to a championship scenario, I think, in order to make certain that this decade belongs to them in the history books.
Hmm. Well, I think we'll have to agree to disagree. I think they already have it locked down. No matter what happens this year.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask the question. Okay,
it's a good topic. It's a good topic.
I understand exactly why you look. I just feel like, you know, and again, I'm bringing this perspective in based on a couple of things. Number one, because, you know, working some, as I do in the national media, I hear what other guys are saying. And I hear what other pundits and what other columnists are writing. I hear what other fans, and I look at what other fans are saying. You know, so I'm trying not to look at it from a relatively myopic New England point of view like we always do here on this show and in PFW and all that stuff, which is what we're supposed to do. That's our job. But, you know, trying to bring in the outside and realize that we're not, you know, East Coast Central, you know, here, and trying to bring in, you know, the other viewpoints, I could certainly see where a Colts fan would make an argument. I certainly can see where a Steelers fan can make an argument. You're hard-pressed for anybody else to because it just doesn't exist.
I still don't see the Colts, though. You have to at least have the same number of Super Bowls.
Well, yes, but I don't think a team of the decade is entirely based on championships only if they have regular season dominance. Now, it means that they might be, you know, choke artists. It means that they might be able to get over the top or get over the hump or whatever it may be in the playoffs. But the fact is they are approaching the Patriots' records for regular season wins.
Well, yeah, but the Buffalo Bills had regular season dominance, and they choked every
year. I just said the Bills lost four Super Bowls. Had they won one or two of those, we'd be looking at them completely different. Completely different. But I'm still mentioning them in the 90s because of what they did in the 90s.
Sure. Yeah, they deserve a mention in the debate. But I don't. Even if they'd if they'd won one or two. Well,
if they'd won one or two,
they might have taken one or two away from Dallas.
There's no question. Well, they obviously lost head-to-head to the Cowboys, but had they been able to say, you know, beat the Giants, then who knows how we'd be able to look at this. Of course, that happened at the end of the other decade, but, you know, you'd have a lot better. I think you'd have a lot different perspective on the Bills as a whole had they ended up winning something. And so if the Steelers or the Colts win this year, I think you're going to have, I think fans outside of New England, and again, you couple that with, there are still a lot of fans around the NFL that believe the Patriots cheated their way to some portion of their three championships. We're never going to be able to overcome that. Now, a lot of people,
Patriots fans would say,
you know what, that's sour grapes. And okay, you know what, it probably is, because none of that has ever been proved conclusively that anything that the Patriots did during the alleged Spygate incident ever helped them win a Super Bowl.
Right.
So anybody that speaks to that is just being an idiot. They don't know because nobody knows. Nobody knows the definitive answer there. I don't even know that Bill Belichick knows. Fact is, though, is it's left a stain, it's left a taint, it's left a mark. It's left an indelible impression negatively on fans outside of New England. So that's why the door is cracked open. I'm not saying that, you know, the Patriots won't eventually shut it should the history books, say, 10 or 20 years from now, look back on this decade and look favorably upon the Patriots. Chances are, Eric, I will agree with you, that if we give this decade, you know, 10 or 20 years breathing room, we'll look back on it and say, yeah, the Patriots were pretty tough in the 2000s. I think we've got to give it to them. But it may be 10 or 20 years before we realize that. I'm talking about now. What's the impression now? And the impression now is the door is ajar if one of those other two teams manages to whip the Patriots or beat them, you know, to the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah.
If the Colts, I think both the Colts and the Steelers would have to win the Super Bowl to knock the Patriots out. All right, let me be clear about that. If they win, then I think they can make a case for knocking the Patriots out. Short of either one of those two teams winning the Super Bowl this year, I would agree with you. I still think this decade belongs to New England, but the door is ajar.
All right.
That's all I'm saying.
All right.
So let's see if we can get some reaction to that. Webradio at patriots.com is how you reach us here on the show. Webradio at patriots.com. Telephone number 508-543-7482. If you want to contribute to the show. Hey, we actually, you know, we had a couple of MP3s yesterday with some commentary. So
oh, really?
That was also, oh, yeah, absolutely. In the second hour, we got
nice.
We had Mikey Vandalism. Yeah, he
Mikey
contributed.
Vandalism chimed in?
Yeah, he chimed in. And I don't remember, who was the young lady that chimed in? Oh, that was yours, Sam.
That was the Sam, yeah.
She was good.
Yeah, I think we're being set up on that one.
You think so?
Yeah. It sounds way too good to be true.
And Eric's very disappointed because she loves artists who wear crew neck sweaters and have soft hands.
And used to be former kickers.
Former college kickers.
Yeah. Yeah. We're being set up like
we're being set up
like something we can't say on the air.
We're being played.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
I think so. I hope I'm wrong because she sounds really hot.
Well, she does. She absolutely does. But you're probably right. You're probably right. Hey, you know what? You just, you know, if you can't see it, then you just have to doubt it. That's all there is to it, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to the internet, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe you know what we need to do? We need to do this show with a webcam, you know?
We've had that suggestion raised a million times. And
I know.
I don't know if that's such a good idea either. We want to keep our audience.
Very so, true. Nobody wants to see Fred Kirsch eat a cheeseburger.
No, especially when he has the two top buttons of his shirt and the chest hair is just sprouting out like a chia pet. That's gross.
God.
Yeah, and it's during lunchtime, at least on the East Coast here. So people
yeah,
are gonna...
that's okay. All right. That's probably a good point. Probably a good point. All right, so there you go. You got a good topic of conversation for today. Webradio at patriots.com. Team of dominance in the aught decade. You know, do you make a case for the New England Patriots? Is it the Patriots hands down in your estimation? Or do you see my side of the argument and tend to agree or disagree that the Steelers and or the Colts could squeeze their way in and make things a little bit uncomfortable in terms of the legacy that the Patriots may leave this decade in the NFL with? Because we're darn near done with this decade. It's hard to believe, isn't it? I mean, when this decade started, Bill Belichick and company were just coming in.
Yeah. It's been,
just coming
this
in.
This is his 10th season.
That's correct.
You can believe it or not.
Came in 2000?
I'm trying to do a piece on how Belichick has changed in the 10 years that he's been here. As a player, as a person, as a coach, you know, as an administrator. I'm sort of trying to get that kind of thing started and trying to ask players and people who know him.
What do you think it might go?
I don't know. That's what I'm curious to find out, whether or not he has changed at all in the eyes of those around him. I'd be curious. I'm very curious to find out if anyone has sensed any sort of change.
You must be in another galaxy somewhere.
No, I'm right here, Bill. I'm still here. But, you know, I think it's almost impossible for somebody not to change over that long a period of time. Don't you?
Yeah, I would agree.
In some way or another.
I have seen change. You know, I think largely he's still a lot the same as he always has been, but I've seen him more receptive to, what's a good word to put this? Uneducated opinions or questions.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't, you know, as quickly dismiss things. I have seen him smile more.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen him willing to joke around with the regulars a bit more. You've probably seen that as well as anybody.
The last couple of years. I think since Spygate, actually, we've seen a change in him as far as his outward demeanor.
You think it was Spygate that brought it out of him?
No, I'm just saying I think that's when we started noticing a change in him. I'm not sure if that necessarily correlates,
mm-hmm.
but that's kind of when we, in PFW at least, kind of noticed a little bit of that opening up that you just talked about.
Do you think he feels like he had to open up at that time?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to ask.
You're
other people
try to
is,
get to.
You know,
yeah.
is that the case? First of all, are we seeing the same thing that they're seeing? And if so, what brought it on? And, you know, is it for the better? For the, you know, how is it affecting the way he coaches, the way he deals with his players, off the field, that kind of thing? I just think it would be kind of interesting because 10 years is, kind of a natural time to stop and pause and look back. And, you know, once this season is over, he'll have had 10 full seasons here in New England. And, I just think it would be interesting.
You know, that's actually a pretty good sort of Zen question as well. I mean, you know, the Patriots, the perception of the Patriots, I mean, obviously certainly began an upswing, an uptick when Bill Parcells came back in the 90s. I mean, we saw that immediately through ticket sales. You know, the impression was that here comes the former coach of the Giants that did, you know, wonders with New York, and he's going to come and he's going to spread his knowledge with New England. And sure enough, the fortunes turned around pretty quickly. You know, you got the Super Bowl within 3-4 years, and then obviously he decided to bolt thereafter. But the Patriots' fortunes as a franchise and their history have changed forever, and for the better, perhaps, I think a lot of people would say, because of that particular move back in the early 1990s. Bill Belichick coming in 2000, even though he was sort of a continuation of what was started there, because he was a Bill Belichick disciple at one point in time, he's sort of taken this now to a new level. They were able to capitalize still on the success that was originally begun by Bill Parcells, and continued maybe to a lesser extent by Pete Carroll before they decided, all right, you know what, maybe it's in Bryce's interest to switch and go this route away as well and bring him back in. And, of course, we'll recall that, you know, the first season that Bill Belichick was here was a 5-11 season, correct? In 2000.
Yeah, Belichick's first season was 5-11.
That's correct. Yeah. So it didn't always start out that way. But that was really more of a byproduct, I think, of things beginning to tail off at the end of Pete Carroll's tenure.
Yeah, there was a transition period going on between Carroll's style and Belichick's style and the type of players that were on the team. Sure, there was. Yeah, I think it would have been unrealistic to expect them to do anything less than, anything more than 500, I think, at that point, given all of the change that was taking place. But he turned it around quickly the following year, completely reversed the record, and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, which I think probably happened a little bit more quickly than most people thought would,
absolutely.
Would happen.
I don't think no people ever would have thought this team would have won a Super Bowl.
No. And I think that whole 2001 season, you know, coming on the heels of 9/11 and
was faded.
Yeah, it's faded, sure. But I think that whole season is looked back at somewhat as a miracle season, you know, by most NFL analysts and a lot of fans, because the Patriots were a huge underdog, and the Rams were the team, you know, at that time that was the dominant force in the NFL.
Yep, and looking to become the next dynasty.
Absolutely. They were certainly well on the way, you'd have to admit, right?
Yeah.
And had they won that Super Bowl against the Patriots, who's to say that they wouldn't be the team of the aughts, as we've been talking about?
Things could have been different.
Things could have certainly been different. So I'm just trying to figure out where things, though, in terms of the legacy and what Belichick has brought to New England over this decade, where things might have turned. I guess we'd probably have to go back and take a little bit closer look at the 2001 season. Could it have been, you know, Mo Lewis's hit on Drew Bledsoe?
I mean, that's certainly the natural one to look at, I think.
Because that's when Tom Brady came in?
If that doesn't happen, I don't think Bledsoe leads them to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've never been willing to go there. I've always been willing to say that I think the Patriots could have gotten there. I'm just not so sure they would have won the game. But then again, I can understand the other argument, too. But they might not have even gotten there had they not lived the quote-unquote charmed life under Brady. You know, because people weren't sure how to, you know, weren't sure how to play Tom Brady because they hadn't seen him. You know, I don't think it's any great secret what he was able to do. It wasn't like, you know, he was providing some sort of magic foo-foo dust to the offense that people hadn't seen before.
No, but he was a different type of player than Bledsoe.
No question.
And
no
question. I think that was the difference. I mean,
sometimes you just live a charmed life.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just live a charmed life, you know, and you get an emotional role, and I think that was part of it. I think that was part of it. Of course, you'll remember in the playoffs when, you know, Brady went down for a brief spell and Bledsoe came back in and threw a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that the Pittsburgh game?
That was the Pittsburgh game, yeah.
Yeah. That comeback by Bledsoe has always led me to believe that the Patriots were capable of getting there with Drew. I just don't know if they could have won with Drew.
Well, see, I look at it in a different, a little bit different way. I look at it as I think it was fitting and appropriate that Bledsoe had a chance to do what he did, given all he had done for the franchise before that. In that, you know, Brady was this new kid who came on the block and was suddenly the, you know, the toast of the town. And Bledsoe was kind of being the forgotten man all along the way there. And then all of a sudden Brady goes down and Bledsoe still is kind of like, you know what, I still can kind of play this game. Don't forget. And, oh, yeah, it's the biggest game of the year to that point, and you need me to come in and save the day.
Right.
And, you know, obviously Bledsoe wasn't going to be long for this team, as we all know, but I think it was appropriate that he had a chance to make that significant a contribution in helping the team win the Super Bowl. Because if he hadn't had that much, if Brady hadn't gone down and they still won the Pittsburgh game and they still would have won the Super Bowl, Bledsoe would have really left this town as sort of, I think there would have been more of a tarnish on his time here because of that, because he would have really been looked at as like, oh, yeah, you know, as soon as Bledsoe went down, he didn't do anything. It was all Brady after that. At least people can look back on Bledsoe's time here and say, yeah, he led him to the Super Bowl in 97, January 97, you know, fell a little short to the Packers. And then he, if it weren't for him coming off the bench against Pittsburgh, they wouldn't have even gotten to the 2001 Super Bowl. So I think he got his due. At a time when it was just looking like he wasn't going to get his due, you know, and I think it was just enough. His mopping up in that game was just enough to save, you know, his legacy as a Patriot. I think it was appropriate given all that he had done before that.
Right. All right. Well, this is all really, you know, good stuff, good conjecture to go back and forth with, and it's hopefully given some of our listeners a chance to sort of reminisce of it themselves and then offer their own opinion. So definitely want your thoughts on whether or not the Patriots are the team of this particular decade, why or why not, and do you agree or disagree with the choices of potential replacements as teams of the decade? And then if you have any other thoughts on Belichick and his legacy here in the 10th season, the final year of this decade, be brave and step right up and let her rip. webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. We'll take a time out here. On the other side, we'll get caught up on what's happened with practice today, and then we'll also begin to turn our attention toward the Miami Dolphins. Coming up inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
It's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery. MassLottery.com.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. and is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to the Hall at PatriotPlace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Welcome back inside the playbook here for a Wednesday. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalabino. Don Banks from SportsIllustrated.com will join us at the top of the next hour. And we'll also hear from Dolphins linebacker Joey Porter. Do you get the feeling, Eric, that this Miami team is starting to get back to the way that they played a little bit last year? Or do you kind of feel like maybe, you know, this team could go the other way and prove that maybe last year was a little bit more of a fluke?
Well, I'm looking at their 3 wins. 2 of them were against the Jets. 1 was against the Bills. And I know they put 30 points up for the last 4 games, but that's not all because of their offense. I'm looking at second-year quarterback Chad Henne, who is not, you know, he was 4-year starter at Michigan, and I saw him play plenty of games at Michigan and thought he was a decent, efficient quarterback. But certainly not a gunslinger type, not somebody I'm afraid of to beat you to win games. You know, obviously Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams are a potent backfield tandem. I just, you know, Jason Taylor's always going to be a problem on defense, but I'm not feeling this team. I'm really not. I really don't think it's even going to be close this weekend.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think it could be, you know, 17, 21 points. I think that's what I'm looking at for this game. I really don't. I'm really not buying that the Dolphins are that good. They stole that song from the Houston Oilers, too.
Yes,
by
well,
the way.
We know that. Every time I hear this song, that's what I think of as the Houston Oilers, because Houston, that's who originally
Oilers,
owned this tune.
I don't know the rest of the words.
Yep.
But I know that they stole it from them.
Yes, they did.
And they'll never admit it, though.
No, of course not. But the Houston Oilers aren't around to defend it anymore, so.
Yeah, it's too bad. No, but seriously, I really don't see. I know they're balanced on offense. They're getting pretty much the exact same net yardage on passing and running. So combined, they look like they're having a great offense, 300 yards a game. Half of that's running and exactly half of that is passing. And you saw it last week against the Jets. They had 52 net yards passing, 52 net yards rushing. They scored, you know, 14 points on special teams, 7 on defense. You know, the other 9 came from their offense, and they only had, like, 1 drive, I think, they had half of their total net yardage for the game on 1 drive. So
okay.
I'm really not – I don't really feel like this is a dominant team. I think they've come back down to earth after what they did last year, going 11-5 and doing what they did, winning the division.
There's probably some agreement with that sentiment. I think that they've been long puzzled about what to do with Ted Ginn, and then obviously, you know, Ginn turns around and returns not 1 but 2 kickoffs, 100 yards plus last week against the Jets, and that certainly was a huge reason why they ended up winning, you know, in New York. But, you know, they're paying an awful lot of money to a guy just to return kicks, so you have to think that at some point they're going to have to ask him to make sure that he gets back out there and learns how to catch the football, otherwise they probably part ways, you know. Then again, you know, hey, you return 2 kicks like that, you're pretty dangerous. And the Patriots, you know, kick return unit hasn't been superlative, but it hasn't been terrible. They've been pretty much mediocre, kind of in the middle of the pack in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see how they treat that this week. You know, Bill was asked about that scenario, situational kicking, whether to kick to Ginn or not this week. And You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they do kick to him and trust to their coverage team, but something tells me that they're going to do something a little bit different, whether it's high, short kickoffs or, you know, depending on how the weather is. I know it's supposed to be sunny, but, you know, if there's a good strong wind, maybe they try to let Gostkowski boom it out of the end zone. And
well, that's what I said yesterday, and I really believe that's going to be the case. They're going to ask, you know, Gostkowski to make a concerted effort to put that ball in the back of the end zone, so if Ginn decides to run it out, you know, he's got 7 or 8 yards to go through.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that would be the best defense against a guy returning at 100 yards. Mm. You don't want to give it to him right at the goal line or, you know, God forbid, short of the goal line. You want to make sure he has to go 7 or 8 yards before he decides to run it out.
Yeah. No, you're right because, I mean, you get a you know, 2 or 3 yards deep in the end zone, pretty much any returner in this league is going to take it out.
I agree.
And especially somebody like Ginn who's has a little confidence coming off of what he's done recently. I think you definitely need to put it at the far end of the end zone, if not all the way through it.
Well, 7 or 8 yards, now you're putting some doubt in the guy's head. And all it's going to take is one, you know, muffed kick one muffed chance where he decides to run it out, say 7 yards deep, and he only gets out to the 15-yard line before that seed of doubt is planted in his head the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So it's a gamble. That's why I think it's incumbent upon, really, this week more than any other. Special teams is going to be a huge factor, and it's going to be incumbent upon the Patriots kicker to, you know, kick the ball as deep as humanly possible. I don't think that they'll squib it. I don't think they'll put it extra high. I don't think they'll try to cough and corner it. I think they're just going to ask Steven to do what he does best, and that's boom the hell out of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, though, to see. I don't think they'll squib, but I would not be surprised to see high short kickoffs to about the 15, 20.
They're just going to adjust.
Well, that's what I mean.
You can get away with that once, but after you do it once, you're going to adjust to it, and they're going to move Ginn up.
Well, if they do that, then you kick it deep, and then there's nobody back there to return it.
Well, sometimes that isn't recognized as quickly, I think, as you think it is.
Maybe.
You know, the Dolphins, I'm sure, are probably even working on how we can best utilize him in the kick, you know, return game this week, because feeling that the Patriots are going to game plan against that. That was responsible for, you know, 14 of their, 35 points they had last week.
Right.
So, you know, that's a huge part of their offense. You can certainly see where they don't get those kick returns. Not only do they not win the game, but that team struggles as a whole, and they're looking at 2-5 instead of 3-4 right now.
Right. Hey, why don't they just do what Andy Reid did a couple of years ago? I think it was against Dallas, and start the game off with an onside kick.
You know? That was great, wasn't it? Yeah.
And they got it.
Yeah.
I think he did that on two occasions where he started either a game or a half off.
You don't recover that, though. Are you putting an undue amount of pressure on your defense?
No, I know. I'm just kind of being a little bit facetious, but. I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if they did more of those kind of trick things on the kickoffs this week.
Interesting. Well, I think it's pretty, you know, knowing the Patriots as we know them, they try to do what they do best and try not to worry so much about the other guys. And my guess is they're just going to ask him just to kick away and be ready for, you know, the eventuality that he'll return, you know, a couple of those out of the end zone. Of course, you know, the more he returns usually will indicate that means the Patriots are in pretty good shape anyway, because that means they'll kick off. They will have just scored themselves.
Right.
And I think you'd gladly take that sort of, you know, set of odds, don't you think?
Sure. Sure. If you're scoring that, if he's kicking off 6-7 times, then, yeah, I don't think you have
much to worry
about.
It means you're in pretty good shape, and you really shouldn't have to worry about what Ted Ginn does, to be honest with you.
Right.
As long as your defense is doing the job whenever, you know, it's in a regular situation, or if you know, Patriots are forced to punt, as long as your defense is doing the job, then shouldn't have to worry too much about returns to Ted Ginn, which is why, again, I think that they'll probably just ask him, all right, you know what, see if you can get it 7 or 8 yards deep, and that's going to be our defense against, you know, a guy that's had 2 big touchdown returns recently.
Yeah. Well, and that'll be.
We'll find out on Sunday.
I think that'll be an interesting aspect of the game to
little
to
side
keep an
light
eye
to the
on.
Game.
Yeah,
yeah,
a little subplot.
Yeah, a little subplot, a little side light to the game. Now, you said the weather report is supposed to be good.
At least from what I'm seeing in the extended forecast, it looks like it's what we've seen the last couple of days, which is sunny, brisk, in the 50s, not much threat of any precipitation of any kind. So it looks like it's going to be a great day for football. Perfect autumn day. It looks like.
Yeah, windows open, John.
Yeah,
windows
open. No threat of snowballs up in the box.
No snowballs.
Hey, did you get any in that Tennessee game?
A little bit.
Did you really?
Yeah, well, just, you know, people were throwing slush in the stands, you know, doing the whole, you know.
So you got shrapnel, not you got.
We got shrapnel. Like, nobody threw. I mean, I knew that if I was going to have to make an announcement
damage.
We're throwing, we'd get pelted.
Yeah.
He's a jackass.
Oh, come on now.
But, no, you know, there was some slush and shrapnel, but other than that, nothing major.
Okay.
I think we survived it.
It was nice and warm and dry in the location that I was.
Oh, yeah, but you were in the bowels of the stadium. In the
I
control
am.
Room, right?
Yeah, I don't miss standing out on the field in that weather.
No, I can only imagine that you don't. Oh, and we miss having you down on the field where we can yell at you too, Jason. So
I hear you yelling the whole game.
Yeah. All right, so we've got the special teams aspect of the game coming up. Yeah. That'd be nice to get that going again, I guess, this weekend. So we got the special teams aspect to think about. You know, and, of course, with Chad Henne, now the quarterback, now that Chad Pennington, you know, is out for the year, this will be our first look at, you know, seeing what his development has been like. Were you at all surprised in any stretch that he actually got the nod and that they didn't, you know, turn to someone else? I mean, you know, it seems to me that had they, you know, given Pat White an opportunity, here's a guy that, you know, certainly could have, you know, basically been almost a full-time Wildcat quarterback in there for you.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do that full-time, though. I think the Wildcat works at its best when it's not a full-time offense. You know, when it's a gimmick play.
Well, he
play
doesn't
in
have to run
situation.
The Wildcat 100.
No, I know. You were saying that he could legitimately be an NFL quarterback, Pat White.
Why else would they draft him unless they thought he could?
Because, you know, maybe they want to do more with the Wildcat. You don't know. I mean, I think you're right. I think they did draft him with an eye towards he can do either one that we ask him to do. He could be a traditional drop-back passer, or he could be a threat in that, you know, running formation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's why they drafted him, but I wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't shock me if they had said, you know, we're gonna make him our starter instead of Henne and use the Wildcat as more of our traditional base offense.
Right.
But, you know, Henne, like I said, Henne was a 4-year starter at Michigan in that traditional drop back passer role, and I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I really don't, but I just don't think. As a second-year player, he's ready to. He's essentially a rookie because he's starting for the first time this year, at significant number of games. And he might have had a couple of starts. No, I guess he no. Pennington was there the whole time last year, so this
yeah.
is really this is essentially his rookie year, even though he's a second-year player. Mm. And I just don't know if he's ready to take command of an offense and, you know, lead a team to the playoffs.
Well, here's a couple of matchups that I'm looking at initially. I'm not sure that, you know, how much I'll change my opinion here, but I think this game will boil down to a couple of things. Number one, you know, you've got a defensive line here that certainly features Jason Taylor in it again. It's not the same Jason Taylor as a few years ago, but nevertheless, here's a guy that, you know, traditionally gave Matt Light fits.
Yep.
And what's potentially going to happen now with Sebastian Vollmer? That's number one. Number two, I know this is one that I saw, I think, in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. A guy like Justin Smiley on the offensive line for the Dolphins against a guy like Mike Wright for the Patriots, who's going to get the start now, would appear
yep.
over Jarvis Green,
yep.
Just because of Jarvis's knee surgery this week, and mm-hmm. whether or not, you know, he can keep Mike from doing what we think Mike can do best, and that's utilize some quickness to penetrate into the offensive backfield.
All right, well, we'll start with number one. I think it's not just going to be Vollmer that has to worry about Taylor, because from all that we've heard and read about him and what they're doing with him this year,
mm-hmm.
He's not – well, first of all, he's listed as outside linebacker. And in the past, he's been primarily defensive end / outside linebacker, but he's sort of taken on that full-time role as an outside backer and not a down lineman. And they're moving him from side to side. He's not – staying on one side all the time. They're doing a lot more movement with him than they used to. So I think Nick Kasher's going to have to worry about him on the right side. And Vollmer, I think you're going to see an equal number of things. He might even up the middle sometimes. He might be a threat, stunting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's not just going to be Vollmer who has to worry about Jason Taylor. I think everybody along the line and even the extra blockers in the backfield, the tight ends as well, are going to have to worry about him too. as far as Mike Wright, I mean, we talked about it the other day. This guy is leading your team in sacks right now, even from a backup role, which is pretty impressive for anybody, particularly a guy who was a, you know, an undrafted rookie free agent making the team. I don't think they lose a whole lot between Wright and Green and moving Wright to the starting role for the next week or two or a month or however long Jarvis is out. Because I think they're essentially the same type of player. And I think you get the same type of production from both of those guys. So I don't think it's going to affect a whole lot what the defense does. It just is going to have one less player in the rotation throughout the game, and I think you'll have to monitor that. But as far as what they want to do schematically, I don't think it's going to make too much of a difference.
Interesting. I know that the Dolphins have also utilized rookie cornerbacks at least recently.
Yep.
Starters. Is that Smith and Davis? Starters,
Sean,
right?
Sean Smith and Vontae Davis are the starters on the corner, and they might even have a starter at safety this week. So
well, that's obviously an
four.
Area that the Patriots should no question try to exploit.
I would think so, yeah. I would think so. You've got to protect Brady and keep that pocket from collapsing and keeping Taylor from getting in there. If he has time to throw,
Those rookies look pretty good if you have, you know, pass rush and you're able to get away with single coverage back there. So the question is, you know, Patriots receivers also need to do their job to make certain they get open against some of that single coverage that undoubtedly the Dolphins are going to try to come with, feeling like they can put enough of a rush on them.
Well, and, you know, last year, I think it was in the second game against Miami, they single covered Moss.
Yes,
you remember that?
Yes,
and he had something like 10 or 12 catches for 125 yards and a pair of touchdowns, or something. He had a ridiculous Moss type output when they single covered him. And I remember after the game, a quote that stood out from him was, "I can't believe they disrespected me like that by single covering him," and he torched them. And that's what he does anytime you single cover him. That when we're in the press box, John, we have a great vantage point of seeing. It's kind of like watching the All-22 camera that the coach's tape is.
Right.
You can see the entire formation and how it's going to play out. We can see at the snap whether or not Moss is being double or single covered at the snap. And every time we see him single covered, I invariably, or one of us in PFW, looks at each other and says, "The ball's going to Moss on this play." You can tell right when it's at the snap just from the alignment, because when he's single covered, it's a mismatch, and Brady goes to him every time. So if the Dolphins want to single cover Moss, go ahead. They're going to get burned.
Well, I think Patriots would have to be licking their chops over that prospect.
Yeah, even if it's only 4 or 5 times a game, they'll go to him 4 or 5 times, and that might be enough to, you know, he might score 2 or 3 times if you single cover him like that, depending on where they are on the field. So, and especially with two, possibly three rookies in that secondary, just give Brady time to throw, and the game's going to be over by halftime.
That certainly puts more of a burden then on not only a guy like Jason Taylor, but, you know, a guy like Joey Porter. We haven't mentioned him since earlier in the hour, and we'll hear from Joey Porter coming up in just a little bit here with his conference call. But fact is that Porter can certainly be a difference maker if he's able to help supply pressure on Brady and force Brady either, number one, to rush his throws, or, you know, before the Patriots receivers are ready to make their breaks, or number two, hit him.
Yeah, I think Porter's a little bit overrated. He is a playmaker. I know that he has his games, he has his moments, but I think more often than not, his talk doesn't back up his play. I mean, if he were a guy who more often than not his play backed up what he said all the time, I'd be more afraid of him. But I think he's a spurt player. He has good games in spurts, and then I think he disappears for long stretches. And speaking of that.
Yeah,
I need a couple of things carry over from yesterday's show before I forget, because it's 3 o'clock.
Oh, yeah, right. You said, you're going to do some stuff.
I looked on the Logan Mankins thing, and I was right. He has 5 penalties this season, 4 of which came in that Tampa game in London.
So beyond the Tampa game, he's been
pretty good as far as penalties go. Yeah.
All right.
Interesting, though,
that we have a different perception about him.
Yeah, because I think, like I said, each year he's good for 1 or 2 games where he just goes and off on a bender like that and has 3 or 4 penalties in a game. And I think that happens every year with him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the perception that you get from him, is that every so often he has such a big, noticeable bad game that it sort of lingers unduly so maybe, but I think that's where that perception comes from.
Okay.
And the second thing is I need to apologize. I hadn't really looked up Julius Peppers' stats.
Yeah, you got called out on the carpet by an emailer.
I did, and duly so. I hadn't really been paying attention to him lately because once...
idiot.
Yeah, I was kind of an idiot because once I realized the Patriots weren't going to get him, I stopped kind of paying attention.
Yeah.
And the last thing I remember seeing and reading about him was that he had kind of been taking plays off in Carolina. I guess he's sort of picked up his play since then, and he's doing pretty well. So apologize for that oversight.
No, well, I kind of thought that would be the case anyway, since he was no longer possibly coming here. There was no real reason to be focusing on it unless, of course, you happen to be glancing at his numbers in particular.
Right. I still don't think he's going to be in Carolina next year, but
I don't either.
That's another story.
Can't they franchise him one more year?
I don't know if that was part of his agreement or not.
Oh.
You know, like when Asante Samuel had the agreement here not to be I don't know if they
franchised
did a similar thing
year.
Or not. I can't recall. But
certainly if
there's no agreement in there, I think Carolina is well within their rights to do that. But
sure, you can do that twice,
yeah.
Right?
They just have to pay him, what, I think 20% of his previous year's salary instead of the 10 in the first year. So be costly, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
With the potential, again, for an uncapped year, and we're getting off on the subject here, but I'll kind of leave you with this here. With the potential for an uncapped year next year, who's the Patriots franchise player?
Could be Vince Wilfork.
That's what I think.
I think
it almost has to be.
Could be.
He's the one guy that you really need that, you know, provides a vital role, certainly within the, you know, the line play, but, you know, you really... He's the one guy now that you gave up on Seymour, he's the one guy you can't really afford to be without.
I would and not saying this just because I used to play the position, but don't be surprised if Steven Gostkowski gets it.
Is he in the last year of his deal?
He's in the last year of a deal, too. He's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. And you might argue that a valuable kicker of his value might be worth doing that, given what you're doing with adding so many defensive linemen and trying to work a lot of these rookies and younger players in. Not saying that that's going to happen or that that's likely to happen. I'm just saying keep that in mind and don't be surprised if it does happen. I still think Wilfork will be the one who gets the tag if they so choose to use one, which I think is a sure thing that they will use it, and I think he'll be the one that gets it. But just something to think about. Something to consider.
Interesting. Did we end up with a practice report for today?
No, I can give you one though real quick here.
Okay.
We had 7 players who weren't there yesterday.
Right.
6 of them were not back again today. The only returning guy was Dallas Thomas.
Okay.
They were in full pads yet again for the second straight day. And a little interesting, wouldn't want to read too much into this, but we talked about it on the other show as well. Sean Springs was wearing Jonathan Wilhite's number 24 jersey out at practice. And Wilhite is one of those 6 guys who wasn't there today and wasn't there yesterday either. So don't know if it's a little inside joke kind of thing where sometimes, you know, we've seen when Vrabel was on this team and he used to wear Brady's number 12 jersey or number 10 jersey from Michigan because they had a little rivalry going with Ohio State, Michigan. But don't know what the deal is with that, but it was just kind of interesting that Wilhite hasn't been out there the last couple of days, and today Springs was wearing his jersey. I don't know if it's a number change or anything significant or why that was happening, but that was just something odd that caught our attention. And when you only get 15 minutes of stretching and 15 seconds of actual drill,
it's tough to find
to
out.
Watch. It's kind of hard to pinpoint anything else of note. So
inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that. We might ask Sean that tomorrow when we see him in the locker room. So,
all right, good stuff, Eric. Thanks as always.
No problem, buddy.
We'll check in with you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
All right, Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. Sneaking a timeout here. We'll come back on the other side and get hour number 2. We were kind of already underway with it, but we'll get hour number 2 in depth here with Don Banks from SI.com. It's upcoming Inside the Playbook.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shape, Sergeant Trace.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook here for a Wednesday as the Pats get set again for the Miami Dolphins. Coming up this Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern time here at Gillette Stadium. Joining us now, Don Banks, who covers the National Football League for Sports Illustrated at SI.com. Don, thanks for spending the time with us today. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
Number one, what are your thoughts overall on the Patriots as they've hit the bye week here and gone through it at 5-2, and Tom Brady's, you know, I guess, alleged struggles, looking like that they're beginning to kind of clear themselves up over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Do you see this team potentially getting any closer to what they left off with 2007, as long as Brady continues his upward turn here?
Closer, yes. It's difficult. I think for Brady and the Patriots, 2007 is a bar that is always going to be maybe impossibly high for them to reach. But it's hard to look at the Patriots the last 2 weeks, obviously, or the last two games, I should say, against the Titans and Bucks, and find much to quibble with. You know, to me, it looks like a team that's starting to hit its stride. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with the division game coming out of the bye. But historically, I think they've been pretty strong coming out of the bye. So I think they're about to take the step of you know, really putting a stranglehold in the division. But obviously, Dolphins, Colts, Jets, Saints is a pretty challenging run right out of the bye.
Yeah, that's one of the things we've been talking about over the course of really the last week, that this November gauntlet is fairly significant for the Patriots. And it's imperative, really, for them to get off to a good start this weekend against a Miami team that, even though they're 3-4 overall, their three wins have already come against AFC East teams. So they're 3-0 in the division. That's a heck of a head start.
Yeah, it is, you know, and that's what Tony Sparano is preaching in Miami right now. They may be 3-4 and in third place in that division, but the way they look at it, they're undefeated in the AFC East, and that gives them a chance in this division race, and it does. I would argue that, you know, the Dolphins are a team at this point that you can't count on from week to week. You don't know which Dolphin team is going to show up, and it's been pretty markedly different. They've had that game where they totally dominated statistically and lost to the Colts, and they had the game on Sunday where they got dominated statistically by the Jets and yet made the plays on kickoff returns and the fumble recovery by Jason Taylor. This is a division waiting to be won by the Patriots. I think the Jets' struggles have been surprising. They really haven't followed up their 3-0 start with anything resembling consistent football. But your point to November, it is a gauntlet, and that's why I think the two home games are absolute must-wins, Dolphins, and then in 2 weeks, the Jets.
You brought up the fact that the Dolphins used special teams to beat the Jets this last week, and Ted Ginn obviously made a little history, first player in NFL history with two touchdowns of 100 yards or more in the same game, and yet the Dolphins still can't figure out a way, I guess, to work him into the regular receiver mix. Why are they having such problems with him?
Well, I mean, his hands have let them down repeatedly, and that's the one thing. When you're a receiver, you can run bad routes and sometimes compensate for with good athleticism and perhaps being able to just go up and get the ball. It's hard to disguise bad hands, and Ted Ginn has had unreliable hands, to be kind, at this point. And, you know, to the point where they were willing to start a rookie in Brian Hartline last week and use Ginn exclusively in the kickoff return. He's not going to return two every week, but he certainly made a statement that he has a place somewhere in the scenario in Miami, and that they can't completely forget about him. That obviously is going to earn him confidence that he's producing on some level, and that probably will help his receiving game.
How do you feel about Chad Henne's, I guess, arrival onto the scene? Obviously, he was pushed into it simply because of the injury to Chad Pennington, but with Chad Henne and some of his pedigree, is he the quarterback, in your opinion, for the long haul for Miami?
Well, I think it's a little premature to know that, but I think they've seen certainly flashes. The game he had on Monday Night Football against the Jets, I thought he looked like a really promising big-time quarterback, made every mm-hmm. throw that night, was poised and calm. He didn't follow up that performance with anything like that anytime soon, so it's been a mixed bag. But in today's NFL, you kind of go down the road with a quarterback until he absolutely proves to you that he doesn't have it, and then you pull the ripcord and go a different direction. But I think Chad Henne at this point has shown enough that Miami's encouraged, but he's going through what looks to be the typical inconsistency of a first-time starter.
You know, Don Banks again from SI and SI.com joining us here inside the playbook. And, Don, you recently wrote a little about the fact that we don't seem to have a lot of turnaround seasons this year as compared to the previous year like we had last year. Case in point here, Dolphins, Ravens, Falcons all had combined losing records 2 years ago, but the teams went 11-5 last year. So we don't see those kind of turnarounds this year. Why is that?
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting when I started crunching the numbers. The three teams that you mentioned obviously were 10-38 in 07 and all in last place. And then in comes Sperano and John Harbaugh and Mike Smith. Really a remarkable thing what they were able to do last year, taking all three of those teams to 11-5 records in the playoffs. But this year's crop of 11 new head coaches, most of whom are rookie head coaches, really only have two standouts. Josh McDaniels has the Broncos 6-1. Jim Caldwell has the Colts 7-0. But, you know, we're not talking about last place teams they took over. The Colts were 12-4, went to the playoffs, and the Broncos, as we tend to forget, even though they ripped everything up, they were 8-5 and had a three-game lead with three games to go in that division and just choked it away. So it's a case of a lot of these jobs got taken by teams that were not just struggling last year, but really on a downward slope and at the bottom of the cycle. And that's why I think, you know, you've got a Todd Haley and an Eric Mangini and a Steve Spagnuolo and a Jim Schwartz and a Raheem Morris, they're all going through absolute bottom of the rebuilding rung right now. And I think it's more typical to see this than to see last year's results. But I think last year's results kind of spoiled everyone, and everyone got the idea that you can go from 4-12 to 11-5 if you just hire the right guy.
Should we then appreciate maybe a little bit more the job that a guy like Tony Sperano did last year?
Well, I think, yeah, that's certainly the lesson that I draw. I mean, because, you know, what Harbaugh and Mike Smith and Sperano did for teams that went 1-15 and 4-12 and 5-11 is it shouldn't happen that way. You shouldn't be able to retool. They all got the right guy. They had the right blend of carryover players and new players. It's much more likely what's unfolding this year around the league. And, you know, there have been some success stories. Rex Ryan obviously had the Jets 3-0 at one point, but they've leveled off. Mike Singletary had his team in San Francisco in first place in the NFC West. They've dipped a little bit. We still could see some success stories this year, but at the midway point, or as we're approaching the midway point, I'd say 9 out of 11 of the new coaches are going through their growing pains.
Yeah, I kind of get that sense as well. And I also get the sense that maybe that the Dolphins, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the Dolphins in this particular instance perhaps are coming back down to earth a little bit more. And maybe what we're seeing this year is a little bit more what kind of a team they really had last year.
You got the sense last year that everything fell right for Miami, from the schedule, which is always a huge component of
right.
a turnaround success story, to just they absolutely got the guy who pushed the right buttons. And you knew, looking at the Miami schedule and the expectation level that was there, that 11-5 is going to be a really tough act to follow in Miami. I thought they were a prime candidate for a drop-off, and I was looking more in the 7-9, 8-8 neighborhood, and they're still kind of, you know, on pace for that. I just think what they did last year was so out of the norm that they were likely to take a step back before they took another step forward.
Mm-hmm. Don, I'd be interested in your take on why we seem to have more good teams at the top and more bad teams at the bottom and less teams in the middle this year. In other words, less of a parity-type league than what we've seen the last few years. Why is that happening this year?
Yeah, it has truly been a rich man, poor man type of league. You know, the best theory I've heard, the one that makes the most sense, is for years the league put forward a system that had all these checks and balances in the way of drafting and scheduling that was supposed to keep everybody pushed toward the middle. But I think what actually has happened is the teams that have the front offices that are sharp and that know what they're doing and have now been in the system long enough to work it to their benefit, the ones that really know how to approach that part of the game and to get the kind of players they want to keep their roster young enough, those front offices and those teams are the ones that win year in and year out and are above, you know, above league average as far as success. And I think the teams that are continue to change and are down at the bottom, it's a self-perpetuating cycle. I think more than ever, the NFL is now rewarding the teams that have the systems and the front offices in place to perpetuate success and know how to work within the salary cap era. And the teams that seem to change their plan every couple years have really bottomed out and have created this completely bottom rung of the league that goes 7 or 8 teams deep. And so you've got the elite class and you've got this awful class, and mm-hmm. there's not as much in the middle as there used to be.
Well, I would certainly buy that. I think that's you're right. I think it's as good an explanation as any. So does that mean then, for instance, let's take a team like the New Orleans Saints, who's at the top of your NFL power rankings this week, and obviously one of two teams at 7-0. Does that mean that the Saints have been a better team maybe than their record would have indicated over the last couple of years?
I would argue that they have underachieved record-wise the last couple of years. I know myself. I think I picked them to go to the Super Bowl a couple times in the last three seasons, and they've had players who have underachieved. They've had a wave of injuries, which no one cares about, but it can affect your bottom line record greatly. I think they have a good head coach and a good front office in place, and now they've been in place as that tandem for four seasons, and I think they have some special players put together. So I would argue, yeah, they're now reaping success this year that is more a direct correlation of what they have in place at the front office and the coaching level. And I thought they did a really smart thing this year by adding the component of Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, because I think what they had on defense was markedly underachieving, so they needed better coaching to find a way to utilize what they did have. And as we see now, they had decent talent. I just don't know that they had the right philosophy and mentality about defense.
And, of course, as we mentioned, the other undefeated team are the Indianapolis Colts. And even though they've had a coaching change, it's pretty clear that now that Peyton Manning has had a year to get rid of that ruptured bursa sack or whatever it was that he had in his knee, he's pretty much back to the Peyton of old, if not as good as he's ever been. Which for Patriots fans, I think, speaks to what Tom Brady might be next year once he's right. able to kind of work all the cobwebs off of being out of football for a while.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think no matter how much you think you're back, perhaps that first year, you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know until you go through it. And even the second half of the season, I think Tom Brady is going to look and feel and act a lot more like the Tom Brady that, you know, that we last saw basically in 07. Again, the bar is set impossibly high from 07, but I do think it'll come together more for him in the second half, and then next year you really might see the Tom Brady who didn't have to ever think about his knee at all, whereas you'll probably hear some sort of comment, I thought I was back, I thought I was 100%, but now I realize, you know, there was some limitation there. And that's a common story you've heard from other guys coming back from a knee. And the point's well made about Peyton Manning. He does look completely and utterly back at ease. And there was a transition period last year when he did not.
No doubt. And isn't it interesting that the Patriots have both the Colts and the Saints in the upcoming schedule in the next month?
Yeah, and in no treat. They go there in both cases. And,
right.
That's, you know, I've already covered one game at the Superdome this year against the Jets and was reminded that it is impossibly loud for an opposing offense. And, of course, we know every time the Patriots and Colts, a game I'll be covering next week in Indianapolis, they always put on a tremendous game and they match wits as well as any two teams in the NFL and have done so for most of this decade.
Don, before we let you go, one of the things that we were kind of debating a little bit here was something that I had read in some of the local papers here and then heard a local talk show talk about, and I thought it was actually kind of interesting subject because it's an often debated subject. You know, when we get to the issue of who's the team of the decade, and you can pretty much define, you know, teams like the Packers of the 60s and the Steelers of the 70s as teams of the decade. But in this particular decade, whereas a couple of years ago, after the 07 season, even though it ended disappointingly for the Patriots, you'd have to say the Patriots would be the team of the aught decade. But if this, let's just say this way, if the Colts or perhaps if the Steelers win the Super Bowl this year, can a case be made for a team other than New England being the standout, memorable team of this decade?
Well, sadly for New England fans, yes. And I think I got the ball rolling on this front. I back in May or June, I believe it was May, I kind of looked at it and tried to jump the gun a little bit. And I did a pretty thorough look, I think, at the team by team all the way across 1 through 32 at the team of the decade. And I argued in that piece that while it looks like a slam dunk for the Patriots, let the Steelers win their third ring of basically the second half of the decade, and you do have a strong argument. I even took it a little further just to stir it up because that's what we love to do on the Internet, and I said, you know, what if the Colts win their second in a, I guess it would be a four-year span, and when you put their regular season record, which would be unmatched, right there alongside, you'd at least have a little bit of an argument for the Colts fan to say, no, wait a minute, maybe, you know, maybe it's not just all come down to simple Super Bowl rings, count them up, and then declare a champion. So I think there's still a debate to be had in, as we enter the second half or approach the second half of the 09 season. But certainly anyone in their right mind and their fair mind would say the Patriots are the leader in the clubhouse.
Does it speak to the parity in the NFL, at least prior to this season, that we're here halfway through the last year of this decade and there's still a little bit of doubt as to who the dominant team has been?
Well, I suppose, although I think parity gets overused, I would argue that it's not particularly indicative of parity that, you know, that a team like the Patriots have been able to stay on top so long. A team like the Colts go to the playoff and win 12 every year. The Steelers every year, maybe save two in this decade have been knocking on the door. In some ways, that harkens back to what we were talking about earlier. The best teams with the best front offices, often the best ownership, the most stability, are the ones who have figured out how to work the system best, and so they're there every year. And I don't think that's parity. I'd say that you had a really strong elite class in the NFL this decade, and by anyone's stretch, the Patriots, the Colts, and the Steelers would be 1, 2, 3 in some order.
Not going to argue that point. That was the point that I made a little bit earlier, and I've had some fans already take me to task for it, but I kind of side where you're siding. I think at least there is a debate here, whereas the Patriots could have slammed the door shut had they just knocked the ball out of David Tyree's hands.
Now that's the beauty of that game and that particular play, because you can take it and see how much further the Patriots' imprint on NFL history could have gone with getting, you know, with closing out that deal and taking care of business that day. It would not have been a debate. And on top of that, you would have added 19-0, which would have clinched the deal, and they would have been one of the greatest teams of all time.
Now, no question.
They're the team of the decade, but we still have a little bit of football left to play this decade.
Absolutely. Don Banks, again, SI.com, covering the National Football League. Don, thanks for the time today. Great to visit with you.
Good to be with you.
You bet. Thanks. Don Banks, again, from Sports Illustrated and SI.com. And, you know, it's kind of funny. It's really ironic that we have him on as a guest today, because I actually had forgotten what he wrote earlier in the year and remember thinking, you know what, that would be a good topic for a rainy day here in the playbook. And then last night I'm reading the information, as I explained with Eric Scalavino earlier, that, you know, the Colts win this weekend. It's 17 in a row. They beat the Patriots next week. It's 18 in a row. And then they match the second all-time best record in NFL history, which the Patriots from 2003-2004 had set in terms of consecutive regular season wins. And so that's what actually got me to thinking. And then you do a little bit more digging, and then you realize that there actually are some that kind of believe like you do. So as it works out, you know, that there are at least a couple of others that might share that opinion. Although looking from the judging here of the inbox from some of you sending us your thoughts on our debate in the last hour here to webradio@patriots.com, that may not necessarily be the case. Let me share a couple of these with you. Howard, our friend in Connecticut, who I knew would chime in on this one, says, until this season is over, I think it is hard to determine which team is the team of the decade. That said, right now I think it is the following. 1, Patriots, 2, Steelers, 3, Colts. Steelers are close to tying with the Pats if they win this year's Super Bowl, and may even get the nod because of the tarnish that the Spygate scandal has left on the Pats this decade. And that was my point exactly to Eric in the opening hour here. My logic, Howard says, is the fact that they have won 3 or 4 Super Bowls this decade, including back-to-back. If the Steelers win this year, they will have 3-3 and back-to-back, which is, in my opinion, equal, not exceeding what the Patriots have done. I understand the Spygate thing is bogus from the perspective that no one knows how it impacted winning championships. But most fans that I talk with still like to throw it up at me when I talk about the past championships. So the taint and tarnish will always be there, which is why I could see the Steelers getting the nod if they win again this year. If the Colts win another this year, I think it gets them closer to the Steelers and Pats, but doesn't quite achieve what they have achieved. All right, Howard, I think that's a pretty sound, reasonable explanation for the debate here. I do would argue, though, that because of the Colts' success in the regular season, yes, a Colts fan can certainly make an argument for being the team of the decade if they win the Super Bowl this year. For instance, Peter sends this one. He says, how do you even make an argument for the other teams? Look at these stats. Steelers entered 2009 at 94-49-1 in the regular season. Colts 101-43, New England 102-42. Playoff records. Pats 14-3, Steelers 11-4, Colts 7-7. Pats also have an 8-5 record against the Colts in the decade. I forget their record against the Steelers, but I'm sure it's even better, so we seem to have their number. I think that they do have an advantage. Now add in 4 Super Bowl appearances, 3 victories, and a 22-game win streak. The 2007 season held the entire NFL captivated as the Patriots had one of the greatest teams of all time. But, Peter, they won't go down as one of the greatest teams of all time because they did not win the big one. Peter says, yes, it is unfortunate they did not win the last game, but they will still be remembered as the best offensive teams of all time. Colts and Saints are undefeated this year, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard announcers say they are nothing compared to the 07 Pats. That was a special team that put its mark on the decade. So how do you get around the fact that the Patriots own every meaningful statistic in the decade? Never mind the fact the entire NFL decade has been centered around them. All right. Here's another one, even further. And this guy doesn't, does he sign his name? Yeah, Brent. I think he's saying, I think he's calling me out as a turd here, but I'm not entirely certain. He says, of course it's the Patriots' decade. Numbers don't lie. Patriots 121-47 overall in the decade. Indy is 115-50. Pittsburgh is 109-55-1. Well, if you let this season play out, Brent, then you can certainly see the Patriots falling behind at least the Colts in those standings. In terms of offensive numbers, the Colts are the highest-scoring team on average in the decade. The best defensive team of the decade, in terms of points allowed, right now, is Baltimore. Those are based on the numbers that you have provided me. So, yeah, you're right. The numbers don't lie. The numbers are actually kind of muddled, and it really doesn't show you the kind of dominance that most of the aforementioned dominant teams of the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s showed during their respective decades. Maybe that's the real thing that I'm trying to get to here. There is some room. There is some wiggle room, as Don Banks just suggested. There is some wiggle room. It doesn't mean that the Patriots won't end up being this quote-unquote team of the aught decade here. And I said as well, as long as they can get to a championship game scenario, AFC or otherwise, then yeah, sure, I think you could say that the Patriots are the team of the first decade of the 2000s and leave it at that. The other teams are going to be looking up at the Patriots in the standings. But if they don't get there, let's say something happens and they don't win the AFC East, although I think that'll be pretty hard for them not to do right now. But let's say they lose in the opening round of the playoffs. And then the Steelers play the Colts for the right to go to the Super Bowl, which could happen. The winner of that game, I think, makes a very strong case for taking the Patriots out of their particular dominant influence.
To any Steeler fans listening, you all suck.
Wow.
Andy sends me a note, by the way. And I'm talking about Andy Hart from PFW, who's listening upstairs. Andy, get back to work. He says, the Patriots are the team of the decade. Stop wasting the listeners' times with your weak-ass anything-but-patriots.com debate. Steelers could make an argument if they win it this year, but still lose the argument. Well, how do they lose it?
You should know I got a little wiener.
Well. You know, he just contradicts himself in that one sentence right there. Come on, Andy. I know you're listening. Man up and come on the show here. Steelers could make an argument if they win it this year. Enough said. Enough said. He says, Colts aren't even in the conversation. Rook, stick to your sport you know and keep criticizing Taylor Tolman's toughness. Oh, you got way too much time on your hands, Andy. Fred, he's not working enough. Assign him something to do, will you? He's spending too much time listening to the computer. Oh, goodness. Stripper sends a note here, and he says, Kerry said the Panthers made no promise that they won't place the franchise tag on him again next season. That's one of the things that Eric and I were talking about in the opening hour today. He said, which that would cost Carolina about $20 million. General manager Marty Herney said, signing the tender does not mean they'll now try to trade Peppers. Only Kerry, not the Panthers, could negotiate with other teams while Peppers remained unsigned. Okay. Fair enough. All right, let's see if we can get, you know, Hart to man up and respond here on the program here. In the meantime, we're also going to come back after a quick timeout and listen to Dolphins linebacker Joey Porter in his conference call with Patriots media at Gillette Stadium earlier today. And we'll do that when we come back in the playbook.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football.
Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game, 5 yards, first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America N.A., member PIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
On the home stretch side of the playbook here for a Wednesday, Andy Hart says he's too busy. Engage in a little bit of debate. It'd only take 2 or 3 minutes because then it would be all over. And he contradicted himself in his last statement anyway. So at any rate, I guess that means we win here. So we'll leave it at that. If you have your opinion, though, on the Team of the Decade issue, there's still a few minutes left for you to fire off your emails. Webradio@patriots.com is, of course, how you reach us here in the program. But it's been an interesting debate. I really believe deep down that the Patriots will end up being thought of, when history is all said and done, that they will end up being this team that, most people look back on this decade and say, all right, that was the dominant team. But you have to admit, if they don't win this year, you could see where the crack of light would exist for a couple of other teams to sneak in there. Had they won in 2007, folks, yeah, it would be a slam dunk, but they didn't win. Legacies in the National Football League are decided on championships, which really probably should eliminate the Colts, even if they win this year, because that would only be two. Okay, so be it. Legacies, though, are decided on championships.
Championship.
Yes. So, all right. Speaking of championships, the Dolphins won the AFC East championship last year, somewhat surprisingly, at 11-5, and the Patriots also finishing 11-5, and certainly didn't make the playoffs. And it's been well documented, and we've talked about it quite a bit. And part of the reason behind the Dolphins' one season turnaround from a one-win team to 11 wins last year, the most remarkable one season turnaround, I think. Yeah, in NFL history, has to do with the fact that the mouth that roared, Joey Porter, was an active, vibrant part, and shall we say, even vocal part of that defense. Joey Porter was on conference call with members of the Patriots media earlier at Gillette Stadium, and let's let you hear what he had to say.
Joey, do you have any reaction to the SI poll that has you the second dirtiest player in the NFL?
No.
Do you think it's fair?
No, but I don't know what you consider dirty. I don't have a lot of personal files, you know, so I don't know what considered dirty is. I mean, I'm fine with the meanest and toughest, if that's how they feel, but dirty is a different category I own. I don't hit people late and stuff like that, so I don't know. I guess it's something that came up with and voted me, so it don't really make me or break me. I'm not too much worried about it.
You think it's a reputation thing?
My reputation is far from playing dirty. You know what I mean? I don't really think I get looked at as a dirty player. You know what I mean? Now, play hard player, stuff like that, yeah, but playing dirty, nah.
Is it a matter of people, you think it maybe becomes one of those things where maybe some people don't like you and just put you on the list?
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of people don't like me, but that's fair to say that I don't like a lot of people either, so it works both ways. Like I said, it's nothing that's going to change my everyday, me being in that poll, 1, 2, 5, wherever they put me up. It's obviously I'm on somebody's mind, though, so that's cool.
Why don't people like you, Joey?
I don't know. What's your name?
Karen.
I don't know, Karen.
So Joey, are you looking forward to possibly facing a rookie left tackle here in Sebastian Vollmer?
It's not really about being the rookie or whoever's in there. I'm just looking forward to this challenge. I mean, it's New England week. So, if Light was in there, I'd be looking forward to that. So, whoever's over there, I'm going to bring my game. I'm going to be ready to play. And that's all I can do at this point in time, just make sure I'm ready to play.
Last year with Matt Cassel, you know, when he was there, you said, you know, you treat him like a backup. Obviously, Vollmer's a backup as well. So how are you going to treat him?
You had the answer to that already. You want me to say what you want me to say? Like, you want me to answer that question? You answer the question I feel about Cassel, but you're trying to get me to say the same thing about
I'm
him.
Trying to get you to
and
say
here's
anything,
Joey Porter's talking about the backup. You go ahead and fill in the blank. Because I'm not falling for none of the little tricks. I mean, I get mad when I want to get mad. Right now, you guys are not, none of the guys I'm mad at, so I'm not going to sit up here and give you nothing to talk about, because I'm not mad at neither one of you media guys in that room. So, if that's what this conversation is going to be about, fishing, y'all should come down here to Miami. We got some good lakes for y'all to fish in.
And ladies, Joey. What
yes, you too, ma'am. You can come too, Karen.
Okay. I think I got my answer, Joey.
All right.
Joey, for a lot of years, the Patriots were, you know, kind of the best of this division. You guys are the champs now. Have you kind of established that division goes through Miami, or is it still up in the air because the Patriots were good for a number of years, too?
The division is just how it works with anything you do. Division goes through the last champion, period. The last champion of the Miami Dolphins. So, we have the conference championship until we lose it. It's ours to lose. You can't just crown the champion because they used to be the champion back in the day. That hardly makes any sense. You know what I mean? It's what you did the last year. You're not never judged off what you did a couple of years ago. It's what you're doing now. So last year we was the champs, and they don't crown another champ until this year, and we're still the remaining champ until something else knocks us off that. So yeah, just by natural thought, you would think, yeah, it comes to Miami. They're the defending champ. You got to go beat them to take the championship from them. That's just how it works.
Joe, you had a...
Go ahead.
I heard the word hate a lot in that locker room after you guys beat the Jets and how you guys felt about them. And I remember you saying, you know, it's always going to bring your best football out when you hate the other guy. You played against the Patriots for quite some time, whether it was the Steelers or Miami. What's your feeling towards New England?
Saying what they feel about me. So do you want me to say it first?
Go
or have
ahead.
They told you how they feel about me first?
I don't know if they like you.
You know they don't like me. let's be honest. You know they don't like me, and that's fair. I don't like them, and that's fair. So it's not like it's a divorce happening. We never really was married anyway.
So you bring the same approach into this game as you would against the Jets last week?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have healthy rivalries, you know. And like I said, to have a rivalry, we have to win some. It can't be one-sided. So we split with them last year. And the year before that, they beat us twice. So this is my third year in this conference going up against them. And we're trying to change the way it used to be. So, but my feelings towards New England goes back further. It goes back to my Pittsburgh days. So, you know, I feel a certain way after some things came out way back when. I was in Pittsburgh, some AFC championships I lost to them a couple times, and come to figure out some months later why we lost. So, yeah, I have a natural hate for them, period. And that's just going to be with me forever. So that's not going to ever going to change.
Can you identify what you're referring to there, Joey?
No, you can fill in the blanks. Y'all smart guys over there.
And girls.
And girls.
But you felt like it cost you rings then.
Yeah, well, I mean, we did this. We do this every year around this time when I do this conference call. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And they know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's not going to change for my thought process on that situation.
Joey, what's the difference going to be facing Tom Brady this year as opposed to Matt Cassel?
Well, you have Tom Brady in the game, who's their natural starter, who's their leader of the team. And, you know, it's Tom Brady, Matt Cassel. It's a big difference, you know. Tom Brady, at that point in time, he's well proven that when I went up against Matt Cassel his first time when he was just trying to figure out the game. But, yeah. I mean, they're full power. They have all the guns and all the weapons. So we got all our guns and all our weapons here, too, and that makes for a good fight.
Joey, I don't know if you've been able to watch their film yet, but having watched, I'm assuming you've watched, Tom, notice any differences, him coming back off of a year off with the knee problem?
No. He still throws the ball. He's still accurate. He still pick you apart if you leave him time. I mean, looks like the same Tom Brady to me.
Joey, how important to their offense is Wes Welker and what he does with the yards after the catch? How big a part of what they do is that?
He's just a guy that can keep moving the chains. You know, he'll catch a deep ball here and there, but that's not what they're using for. They're using for all the little screens and crossing routes just to get him involved in the game and lollygag you to sleep with worrying about where Wes is at. Then they try you deep with Randy, you know. And then once you're worried about Wes and Randy, they'll pound the ball. And after all that, then they'll throw some seam routes in to Watson. So, I mean, they got all the weapons. I mean, let's be honest. They got the guys over their offense that can move the ball. But our job is to go out there and make all that disruptive, you know. Don't let them feel comfortable like they feel. We don't want them to feel like they're 7-on-7 at practice just playing pitch and catch. You know, we're supposed to go out there and try and make it hard for everybody to eat that day. And that's what my intentions is. My intentions is not to let Tom Brady have a nice day just sitting back there in the pocket, patting the ball, waiting for Wes to get open and Randy to get open and these guys. You know, we want to have somebody in his face, hitting him, getting him on the ground as many times as possible.
What can you guys take from the game last year in Miami where, you know, they threw for a lot of yards and you guys and Moss had the big game?
Yeah, we obviously played them different from the first time we did. You know, they came and played us different. You know, they came out and spread us out, and that's not the fight they wanted the first time. They ran away from the pound game. You know, we kind of pounded them up there the first time, and so we kind of was expecting the same type of game, and they switched up and went to the pass formation. They just pretty much the game got away from us when they did that. But that was then. This is a whole new year. Whole new characters. You know, they have their main guy back, and we have some different guys in different situations over here. But to make no mistake, we're ready for whatever they come with.
Joey, one more thing kind of comparing that then. I mean, last year you were 2-4, and obviously at that point something happened because you guys turned around and win 11 games. Do you see similarities? I mean, even the last couple of weeks beating the Jets and everything else, where maybe this team's starting to turn the corner the way that one did?
Actually, we could have turned the corner a couple of weeks ago. We just, you know, we keep doing little things not to finish the game, and that's what we did. But we're not exactly where we want to be, but we're heading in the right direction. I can say that. You know, we're heading in the right direction. If we play like we did last week and keep building on that, we'll be okay.
Hey, Joey, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joey.
Thanks, Joey.
Okay, you're welcome.
Porter, linebacker for the Miami Dolphins, in conference call with Patriots media earlier today at Gillette. You know, obviously, Patriots fans probably don't have any love lost for the guy, but one thing that I actually admire about Joey Porter is the fact that the guy wears his emotions and his feelings right out on his shirt sleeve for everybody to see. It's very hard not to understand where the guy's coming from, whether or not you believe in what he says or you like what he does or if you think he's a dirty player like the SI poll, which we talked about on yesterday's show, or whatever. It doesn't make any difference. Fact is that the guy is what he is. And there was a quote attributed to him, I think it was in the Globe earlier this week, but I managed to write it down here. It says, I wish you could hate every team the way you're going to hate your rival. That brings your best football. This is Porter after Miami beat the Jets this past weekend. He says, you're going to get your best fight when you hate him, and he hates you, because there ain't no running from one another. End quote. I think that says it all in a nutshell. That's the National Football League. That's the NFL. That's Joey Porter. I mean, it really doesn't get any more basic than that. So it's really hard for a guy who believes that to really hate on him. You don't have to like his bluster. You don't like the fact that he opens his mouth and, you know, and says things to inflame situations or whatever. You could say, you know, he's crass. You could say he has a lack of class. Whatever you want to say. But the fact is the guy actually backs up exactly what it is he believes. You know, earlier in his conversation there, he's talking about how he hates the Patriots from his time in Pittsburgh. Well, there's a very good reason for that. It's twofold if you didn't understand all the hidden innuendo and everything going there. Number one, the Steelers were at home. The Patriots came into their home. They beat them. And that's certainly one of the reasons why the Patriots have the nod to this extent over a team like Pittsburgh and the team of the decade running. Yeah, that's number one. Those were games that the Steelers clearly felt they should not have lost, and they did. And number two, there's no question he's one of those few players that is still hanging on to, you know, the Spygate issue and feels like that put the Patriots or gave them an unfair advantage. Well, Joey, that part is not going to catch – that's not going to catch any any sympathy from anybody, because fact is that all teams in the NFL, to a certain extent, do or did what the Patriots did at that time, and that's documented. So you can use that as a crutch, and you can use that as something to lean on, and you can use that as something that might help you sleep at night, and something to help make you feel better and help salve the wounds of those Pittsburgh losses and the earlier Miami losses before you finally got your revenge last year in Foxborough. That's all fine and good. So while we may not like to hear a lot from the guy, because he's volatile, because he likes to mouth off, I would still argue that having guys like Joey Porter in the league is very good for the NFL, because it gives us a polarizing subject in which we can all sort of rally around. It gets the juices going. It gets the emotions going. It gets us looking forward to the game to see what the mouth that roared had to say or had to do in the game. So, like him or hate him, it's still good for the league. All right, a couple of other emails to wrap up the show with here in terms of our question of the day and talking about the team of the decade issue for the Patriots. William sends this. He says, on the team of the decade, the Patriots twice went through Pitt, unless the Steelers beat the Patriots, and he leaves it open-ended. He said, oh, by the way, morons will exist, especially in Pittsburgh. And number two, the decade ends at 2010, unless one counts 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and not 1 through 10. I've seen it done both ways, to be honest with you. I don't know. Who knows when the decade really ends? You know, it would seem to me, and again, this is just logic to me, William, but, you know, if you're going with 2010 as opposed to 2009, 10 would indicate the start of the next decade, the tens, the teens. It's certainly not an aught
there would be no math.
Decade. Sorry, Chevy. There's a little math here. I don't know. Just me. I guess it really depends. It's a matter of semantics on how you look at when the end of one decade is and when the start of the next one is. Stripper says the reason that Miami has not utilized Pat White more at quarterback or over Chad Henne, as we were talking about earlier, is because he says Pat White throws like a girl. Great insight. Don't you think? Would you agree with me there? It's wonderful insight. It is true that Pat White has has had some struggles with his accuracy. Let's put it that way. But I saw the guy play 4 years in college pretty closely. I didn't think physically he'd be able to stand up to the rigors of being an everyday, every down type of quarterback, number one guy in the NFL. Certainly thought he could come in and be a backup or a change of pace guy, which basically is what Miami drafted him to be. But when you're looking at a guy like Henning, who physically may be a little bit different as opposed to a guy like Pat White is, hey, if they can work out the kinks in his throwing, you know, whatever they may be, I think you got to look at the guy and give him a shot. And then I got one more here. Oh, Stripper sends another one here. He says, the Pats have won 3 Super Bowls this decade and been to 4. Steelers have won 2, been to 2. Steelers have had a couple losing seasons this decade. Pats have had only 1. Pats have owned the Steelers this decade with a 7-2 record against them, including stomping the bleep out of them on their own field in 2 AFC championship games. Again, this is all stuff that we have documented already. So there you go. And then finally we get this from Matt, Brooklyn Matt, who says, hey, John, Joey Porter is the Andy Hart of the NFL. I like that. I like that. That's good. The mouth that roared, huh? In particular. And the little girl left, too. I don't know if Joey Porter has a little girl left like Andy has, but who knows? Anyway, you know what? Fact is that this is all great stuff to debate. There's no real right or wrong answer here. I brought it up simply because, again, like I said earlier, I saw in my NFL notes that the Colts, with a win this weekend, would reach 17 straight regular season wins. And then that would leave them to play the Patriots for a potential 18th straight regular season win, which would tie the Patriots, if they could get to 18, for the second best regular season win streak of all time. Patriots, of course, had the 21-game regular season win streak from 2006 through 08, and then won 18 straight from 03 through 04. So the Colts, ironically, could match that record with a win against the Patriots if they win this weekend. And so I thought about that. I'm thinking, well, does that put them any more closer to a potential team of the decade argument? I would answer, sure, why not? Steelers, if they win, yes, it'll be 3 Super Bowls, but it'll also be 3 in the last 4 years in the decade, and it will also be 3 wins. Whereas the Patriots never really had, or at least the Steelers, I mean, well, yeah, the Patriots never really had an opportunity to go 3-for-3. They lost one. Yeah, they've been to one, but they lost one. To me, that's a wash. So at any rate, that's really, I mean, it's a debatable subject. It is, you know, obviously I never really expected Patriots fans to agree with every word I had to say, because obviously this is going right up against you. I mean, I think every Patriots fan, including yours truly, wants to think of the Patriots as the team of the decade. It's something we can all hang our hats on. It gives us reason to be proud to follow this team and be a Patriots fan and wear the jersey and all that kind of stuff. And I understand all of that. That's part of being what a fan is all about. But when you try to step aside from that and look at it somewhat analytically, it looks to me that there is at least a little bit of a crack there, a little bit of an opportunity for another team to sort of wedge their way into the discussion. That's all it's all about. Maybe this will be a discussion we can bring up later in this year should all of the aforementioned teams, Patriots, Colts, Steelers, advance into the playoffs. Let's see. All right. Shop Talk is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio. Christina Acura hosts that program, of course. Hi, Christina. How are you?
I'm is she fabulous. There? How are you doing?
Yes, oh, great.
I'm here. Sorry. You're... kind of just hopped into the seat.
Oh.
Well, Jason doesn't warn me these days. He doesn't at all.
Yeah, perfect timing.
It's always my fault.
Of course it is. Of course it is. So now, special guest today in Shop Talk for
special
you?
Special guest. We have Al Menino from Reebok on with us. He's going to give us all the latest and greatest from Reebok in the pro shop. So stay listening if you're out there. Listen to us right now.
Sounds like some incentive.
It definitely is incentive. It's going to be a good one.
All right, very good. All right, coming up in just a couple of moments. Thanks to Don Banks from SI.com and, of course, Eric Scalavino for joining us in the playbook. We'll be back same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow, folks.